The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Good to be with you. Really good to be with you. At my age, I'm getting close to that age where it's pretty much good to be anywhere. Program is The Doctor Is In. It's a call-in program. I forget how many emails I get a month on please take this guest. This guest wrote a book, and we have a lot of folks. Most of the people who write me with this kind of stuff, by the way, are not of a religious bent or some spiritual matter. They're just across the whole board. They just see some guy with a program like this, figuring he wants to talk about people who have some ideas about living life, but not necessarily anything related to religion at all. Matter of fact, probably very secular. You're my guests, and most of you have a godly worldview. You want to live your life well. Do what we can here to give you some help, whether it is a kid or something that perplexes you, something nagging at you. There's a lot of that kind of stuff, you know. Well, you can call. It's easy enough. You get Andrew Krucek. He's call screaming today. He's doing a lot of stuff over that way. 877-573-7825. Now, if you can't remember those 10 digits, which 7 is really the optimum number of digits for someone to remember. That's why the old phone numbers had only 7 digits and you didn't make long-distance calls because it pretty much cost a house payment. But 877 is easy enough to remember. That means free, but that's not even a thing anymore because everybody has calls all over the whole universe with their cell phones or even their home lines. Remember those? 877-573-7825 or 877-57-EQUAL. We didn't do that. That's just the best thing we could get out of those numbers. I'm a psychologist. That's what I do for a living. There are many different kinds of psychologists. The clinical is the one I would be. The clinical psychologist, when we were trained, we had to do a lot of work in research, too. We had to take courses in statistics, courses in research design, courses in analyzing research, developing experiments, because they figured, okay, you're going to be a clinician, but you're also going to be a researcher. Well, many of us just straight went into clinical work and the research aspect of it. We didn't go to universities, or I didn't go to university. I went to a tiny little room in Lisbon, Ohio, in an old house where we started out. But here on the program, we talk about stuff that matters to you, things that are important to you about kids or jobs or stress or just something. You know, I can't solve the whole problem. Well, sometimes we can, but we can give you a few ideas, a few thoughts, something perhaps you haven't pondered. Sometimes you just want a little support, don't you? For somebody to say, you know, you're not way off on this, in my opinion, anyway. 877-573-7825. I was pondering atheists. I don't understand atheists. I really don't. First of all, they're irrational. If you talk to an atheist any amount of time, they're irrational. Now, why is that? Of course, they think we're irrational, right? They just think faith has no reason attached to it whatsoever. It's just faith, and you're just blindly believing in some spirit in the sky because it makes you feel good. But they declare that they do not believe God exists. They don't declare that they don't believe in God. They declare he doesn't exist. That's a big difference. Now, if you look at this, they're proving a negative, or they're trying to prove a negative. They're going to every corner of every place all over and saying, he's not here, he's not here, I don't see him here, I don't see him here. Now, granted, God is not something visible to the eye, doesn't take up space. Nevertheless, they're still saying he is not here. In any way you want to take that word, he's not here. And they base that upon their declaration. And what is their declaration based upon? Well, usually some amount of, I don't see enough evidence. Now, I guess it comes down to what you define as evidence. But I like one of the arguments against atheism put forth by C.S. Lewis in the book Miracles. If there is no God, then your brain, with its trillions of neurological connections, and its multi-billions and billions and billions, as Carl Sagan would put it, of neurons up there, is random. What you think, it's just random. There's nothing guiding it.
What's guiding it? You're guiding it.
Well, no. I'm nothing but those chemicals. There's nothing over top of those chemicals. Those chemicals rule. So when those chemicals say there is no God, how do I know that? Because those chemicals are not attached to anything above themselves. This has been one of the great mysteries of people who ponder God, which is, what is consciousness? If I want to think about my second grade teacher, I can go there. Now, the argument to that I've heard is, well, no, you're not going all around your brain. That's just random. Those neurons fired off and you concluded that you thought about your second grade teacher, but you didn't think about your second grade teacher. Your brain did. Okay. Well, then let's solve a problem. Let's take a reasonably intricate mathematical problem, put it in front of you and say, solve this. Now that requires organization. That requires me somehow, some way, moving around my brain, gathering up information from various places in my brain, thinking through connections, deductions. Who's doing that? Is my brain doing that? How does it do that? How does it know how to solve that problem? It makes more sense to think there is something outside that brain. See, Christians call that a soul. Something outside that brain. Oh, but Dr. Ray, first of all, when there's brain damage, it changes the person's personality. If somebody has Alzheimer's, they're not who they are anymore. So you see, your personality and everything is just in your brain. That's it. If I play a piano and I'm the best musician in the world, and that piano is out of tune, I can't make music. When the brain is damaged, my consciousness, my soul, whatever it is that is the life in me, can't play that brain. The brain doesn't work. It makes really no sense. I've thought about this so much. It makes really no sense to say, I'm an atheist. How'd you decide that? Well, obviously my brain did, because there's nothing else outside my brain. My brain is me. So my brain decided. Well, how did you get your brain to decide it? My brain is capable of thinking. My brain is capable of reasoning. Who directs the brain? If it's not attached to any other higher source, then it just fires. And it creates the illusion that you're thinking, because you're really not. It's just random. How do you even know to trust what you've concluded? Because there isn't anything directing that brain. That brain's its own entity. Does what it wants, when it wants, and if it says there's no God and I'm an atheist, okay, your brain decided that. Maybe you didn't. It's interesting. See, we don't act like the brain is it. We act like there's more to it, but I'm not going to go there. Because then I got to start pondering the existence of this being that has been called God. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number to call to get onto the program. I would love to hear from you. Let's talk.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. My wife and I have used Seton Home curriculum for our homeschooling. One of the great things about it, you learn about your faith, not just in religion, but history and English and science and reading. Their curriculum uses saints as role models. I don't think they've used me yet. Children are prepared to rationally explain and defend their faith. It permeates the instruction. You want to give your kids not only a top-notch education, but an understanding of their faith as it permeates the subjects that matter in their lives. I don't know if there's too much better than Seton homeschooling. We used it a lot. You are the best teacher for all of that. Let Seton get right beside you and give you the material you need. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
There was no single event. It was more gradual. You know, eventually you just don't go one Sunday, and then you don't go two Sundays in a row. Then went through a divorce and ended up being a single parent. If I didn't have church or God, I would be back at that lonely stage, that trouble stage. Whenever you get anxious and worry about things, you just know that Jesus has it under control.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
During the break, I'll work on something. But then I keep remembering that study that came out that said it's really hard to multitask because you do each individual task less efficiently. I was wondering about that. I thought I led myself to believe, yeah, I can do this. Sure, during the break, I can just take a look at this and write this. And then I go back to it after the break and go, that's not very good. Vicky's calling from Springfield, Illinois. Hello, Vicki.
Hi.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Well, my husband of 44 years died in May. Unexpectedly, he'd been in the hospital for 2 weeks for low blood pressure and was expected to be released that day. Hello?
I'm with you.
Oh.
You couldn't visit him. I take it, Vicki, you couldn't visit him during that time, right? Uh-oh, Vicki, you got something happening with your phone. You still there, dear? Okay, you call back if you can. Call back if you can on another line, okay? 877-573-7825. Phone lines are pretty open, so I invite you. I know one of the number one things people say when they write an email asking for some kind of thoughts or guidance is, you know, and I'm not sure I can get through on the phone. Well, we've got a lot of lines, and for the most part, you can. There's not too much time where you can't get through, because sometimes people people wait on the line, and then for some reason they have to go. They leave, and they never stayed long enough to get on the air. So 877-573-7825. I don't know if I mentioned this. This is one of the problems. You got Vicky? All right, let's get to Vicky again. Hi, Vicky.
Try it again.
Yeah, you're clear now. Okay. So your husband of 44 years was ill in the hospital for 2 weeks, and I assume that you were not allowed to go visit him.
Right.
Oh, boy.
And at one point, well, he was there on his birthday, and he called to see if I was going to come up the next day, and they hadn't told him why I hadn't been visiting him.
Oh.
Rather distressing.
Oh, I'd say so. Wait, they did not say that they were quarantining patients because of the, did he know when he went into the hospital in May, this was all going on at peak strength. So did he know when he went in that you wouldn't be allowed to visit him?
Well, I thought he did, but he was so sick that, you know, because they let me go in when he was in the ER, and I didn't stay in a long time because he was pretty sick. And I said, well, I have to leave. I leave, but I won't be able, they won't let me go up into the hospital. So I assumed he knew that. He had become almost deaf. He had many medical problems. And recently he'd become almost totally blind. But he was supposed to be released that day, and I was sitting at work, and we were trying to figure out a way for me to get to see him when he went to the rehab facility. And the doctor called and said he died of cardiac arrest.
Oh, my.
And then
I'm
his funeral was on our 44th anniversary.
And you, could you have any kind of funeral?
We did get to have a funeral mass. Like, we were really lucky because I think it had just the end of that month, they had opened it up so you could have like 10 people. But we did get to have a funeral mass.
How are you doing now? It's really very, very fresh. It's only been 2-3 months. It's very fresh. So how are you doing?
You know, I'm good. I work all day long, and as long as I'm at work and busy and doing things, but when I go home at night, I'm just kind of lost.
I could understand that. 44 years together.
Have no desire to do anything. No desire to eat. It's like I'm just kind of lost when I get home. And last night I went out to eat, and all I think of is, oh, he would have really enjoyed this.
Sure. And you know what, Vicky? That's going to happen for a long time. As you experience things that you used to experience together, holidays, birthdays, trips, going to breakfast, all those things, laying down watching TV, all of that is going to strike you as, oh boy, this is what we used to do together. That is, don't think, here's what I'm saying to you, Vicky, don't think that somehow you're not dealing with this because you have very powerful emotions about it. I always tell people, as a rule of thumb, for 1 year, pretty much any emotion can hit you about any time. You could be just fine and then start crying. You could say, I don't want to go play cards with my friends. I just don't want to go. I just don't want to laugh. I don't feel like it. Okay. All right, you don't have to force yourself to do things. Recognize that this is all very, very inch by inch. And little bit by little bit, you'll regain some of your footing. And you'll probably always say, I got an extra special reason now to look forward to heaven. Because I don't know exactly how I'll know my husband, but I think I will. It'd be nice to see him without sins. That'd be good, wouldn't it? be a lot easier to get along with. You too, huh? So, my dear, you There's no magic in getting over it. It takes time. I would caution you on this, though. If you have any guilt that maybe you weren't the wife, you look back on it and go, I could have been a better wife, or I should have been easier to get along with, or I could have done this. Whatever it was, the guilt isn't going to do you any good. We're all human, and we all could have treated people better in our lives who have passed away. When my mom and dad passed away, I remember thinking, you know, I should have gone to see mom and dad more. I did okay. I was an Italian son, you know, you go in every 12 minutes. But I could have gone to see mom and dad more. I could have spent more time just sitting with my dad. So that's the one thing you really got to watch, Ricky. Don't beat yourself up over that. God bless you, dear. Kimberly, St. Charles, Missouri. She had a priest recently talk about atheism. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This past Sunday, we were at Mass, and the priest talked about atheism. And he made an indication that I'd never thought about before, and I thought I'd, you know, share with you, that he thinks atheists have a lot of faith. They just lack the love and belief in that faith. Because he made the point to an atheist that he said, well, do you get in the car? Do you drive every day? And the atheist said, yes. And he goes, well, do you trust that that person's not going to cross and come over and kill you and hit you? Yeah. Okay. And then you order pizza, and the pizza guy comes and delivers your pizza, and you don't think he's ever done anything to the pizza. You take it, you pay for it. Yeah. You have a lot of faith, a lot of faith in other people. And his point was, and what he got around to saying is, they doubt their faith, and they doubt the love of others. And as Christians, what we're supposed to do is be a light of that love and a continuance that shows them that they have faith and that they can enact it. And my question to you is, like, it's easy to say that on the pulpit. How do you do that? How do you do that to an atheist who is automatically on the defensive?
I was driving in the car once with a childhood friend. We were friends all through childhood. I was often at his house with his mom and dad, etc. Lifelong friend. About 10 years ago, he said, you know, Raim, if you don't know this, I'm an atheist. And I said, well, I suspected that. And he said, well, I just figured I better tell you, because it'll probably affect our friendship. And I said, no, it won't. Why would it? I said, I would want you to believe certain things, but I'm not going to shun you because you don't. And I think I shocked him. Okay. I think it shocked him. You know, I have relatives who would be considered agnostics. And they don't want in any way to talk about matters of faith. They just don't want to talk about it. That's it. If you bring it up, they're gonna retreat or get hostile. Okay. All right. I will just be as good to you as I can be, you know, as pleasant as I can be. Yeah, if you attack something like the church, I may try to clarify your thinking. But I'm not gonna make that the focal point of our relationship. Now, granted, it's easier to get close to somebody who thinks spiritually like you do. That's certainly where we gravitate. But I have a lot of people in my life that I don't have any idea what they think about God, and they've never brought it up, and they don't want to bring it up. Okay. I guess the only thing I can do is just be one of the nicer people to be around for them. You know, they don't see me as a lips-pursed Christian, you know, like the church lady. That's kind of how I've come to the conclusion in these times, Kimberly. And there's a lot more, especially among young people who just have little faith. 877-573-7825. I didn't give Kimberly a very good answer at all. I don't want to go back and listen to that again, because I will be disturbed at how erratic, shallow my answer was. 877-57-EQUAL. Straighten me out.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
We were made for spiritual greatness. The divine image is in every person, however dimly seen in some. God gave man a spiritual and immortal soul. From the first moment in the womb, he or she is destined for eternal life with God. Man, by his reasoning, is capable of understanding the order the Creator has established. By our will, we are capable of aligning ourselves with our true good, which is where we find our perfection. Reason provides recognition of God's voice directing us toward good and avoiding evil. The law of God is made known by our conscience and is fulfilled by the love of God and love of neighbor. Because our first parents sinned, we suffer the wound of original sin. Thus, while we still desire good, we are inclined toward evil and subject to error. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Call to Communion.
Through Edmonton Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders. This afternoon, 2 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Nice trio. Saxophone, piano, and brush drums, huh? That's cool. Dr. Ray Guarendi, good Lord permitting, after the program today, I'm going to head home and the world over, sending a camera crew out. I've been with Raymond a number of times. He names himself Raymond Arroyo because I don't want people to confuse him, you know, with me, you know, two different Rays. Although I did want to get together with him and do a side-by-side show all Ray all day, but he hasn't followed up on that. Nevertheless, good Lord permitting, we do the taping today, and then tomorrow I will be doing a segment with Raymond. Going to talk about the unintended effects of the whole mask thing on our children, frightening them to death. Yes, it is. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just simply saying be aware of this, what seems to be an unanticipated, which boggles my mind. How could anybody not anticipate this was going to wholesale do this to kids? I don't know. Okay. Joseph from Nebraska. Hi, Joseph.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'll try to be quick if I ramble on.
Joseph, how old are you?
19.
19, all right. Sound like a young man. Okie doke.
I wanted to ask, what would you suggest for discerning what's God's voice in your heart? Because I've been trying to pray a lot more, but I find myself arguing. I can't tell with whom. Is it with God? Is it with myself? Is it? Yeah, am I talking to myself to make myself feel better? So
wait a minute. What do you think God is putting on your heart that you have to argue with him about?
I never really thought about it that way, but it's rather when I'm trying to decide on something, if I have to decide between two options and neither one is more obviously good than the other, even if I want one more than the other. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me give you a couple of guidelines on this, because this is your question here is very common, especially among people of faith.
The first thing you do is you know it's not God's voice if that little nudge in your head, in your heart, is telling you to do something against what God has taught us. For example, I've had people come in my office and say, I think God wants me to leave my spouse. Okay. Now, except in very extreme situations, you got to question whether that's God's voice or this person's voice. Okay. I think God wants me to take this job so I can buy that house that's 7,000 square feet. Okay. So in other words, that's the first rule. If anything is in your mind and heart that you think God might be guiding you toward, you ask the question, is this going against God's moral instructions? That's the first thing. The second thing is, I'm convinced, Joseph, that much of what we think God would want us to do in our day-to-day choices is irrelevant. It doesn't matter, because whether you go one direction or another, whether you say, well, I don't know, should I work this year and then go to college? Should I go to college for 2 years? Well, should I go to that college or that college? Those kinds of life decisions, I believe you can pray for guidance, but if you're still not sure, then you say, well, Lord, here's what I'm going to do. You gave me a brain. I'm weighing them both. I'm going to go in this direction. Help me out here. If I went the wrong way, you'll show it to me. Many of the things that I've done in my life, Joseph, after I've gone in that direction a while, I've found out that was not a good direction, or it was a good direction. But it took some time. I didn't automatically know at the outset. I didn't go, well, I know what God wants me to do. He wants me to do this. I'll give you a small example. I didn't want to be on the radio. When I was first approached for Catholic radio, I said no. I was doing a whole lot of other things, and I just did not want to be locked to a microphone. I didn't. I dramatically enjoyed my freedom. But what happened over a period of 6 months, a little trial, I took it for a trial, not figuring I was going to last. I realized it was something that was good. And whether I wanted to be there or I didn't, I think God showed me it was good. So that's what I mean. You don't agonize so much over non-moral issues, life issues. Say, dear Lord, I'm gone in this direction. I hope it's the right one for me. If it's not, you'll show me. That's what I think. The moral issues are relatively clear. He's given us his church to teach us. He's given us scripture. It's pretty clear. You don't have to worry about, well, God's telling me to go against his own moral teaching. I just feel he is. Well, then your feeling is wrong. It's indigestion. It's the pizza you ate last night. What do you think about all that dumping on you there, Joseph?
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you very much.
Sure. Don't agonize over, well, does he want me to go here? Or does he want me to go there? Does he want me to buy this? Does he want me to buy that? Does he want me to do this? Does he want me to do that? I can just see God saying, make a good choice. Ask for some wisdom, judgment, and I'll be with you. I'll be with you along the way. I can't tell you how many things, Joseph, I chose to do and later on went, well, that was dumb. That didn't work out at all. Well, sure glad God showed me. God bless, Joseph. Thanks for calling, buddy. All righty. I'm going to go to after the break. I'm going to got a hard break coming up in about a minute here. We'll go to Teresa and then your calls. My wife said something once because we were in the evangelical world, and my experience has been, at least in the group that we were with, there was more of the Joseph type question. How do I know what God wants me to do? And much of that was just life stuff. It wasn't moral stuff. It wasn't necessarily personal growth stuff. It was, what do I do to make my life better as I see it? What would God want me to do here? And my wife said, you know, I have a hard enough time doing what God has told me in his word and in his church what I'm supposed to do. Much less throwing in all these decisions about which job to take, which car to buy, whether to move and not move. I got a dear friend, and they're moving, and they're making a huge move. Now, okay, how's that going to work out? Well, they're going to find out. But I think whatever happens, they're faith-filled enough people to deal well with it.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Vatican II teaches that every baptized person is a participant in the threefold office of Jesus, which is priest, prophet, and king. So as priest, Christ is a sanctifier. He effects a reconciliation between divinity and humanity, right, by his great sacrifice on the cross. Every baptized person does indeed participate in that, in the measure that we all have that calling to reconcile divinity and humanity, to bring God to people and people to God. That's true of every baptized person. Vatican II further specifies that the ordained priesthood is different, not only in degree, but in kind. And it has to do with the identification between the ordained priest, I think, and the Mass, and a unique relationship to the sacraments. Every baptized person has a task of reconciling divinity and humanity. The ordained priest does it in this sort of heightened sacramental and Eucharistic way.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
John 6, verses 48 to 58. Jesus says, "I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and they died. This is the bread," meaning me. "This is the bread which comes down from heaven, that a man may eat of it and never die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread which I shall give for the life of the world is my flesh." At which the Jews disputed among themselves, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" They're scandalized by this. How is it that we're not? How is it that we just hear this and go, "Oh yeah, I know that passage"? They're just outraged and at least perplexed. Sane people, inspired teachers, wise men, prophets don't say things like this.
My producer man, Andrew Krucek, is always thinking. He's always thinking. Because we're going to go to Teresa from Washington State. She's engaged. And he said he wanted to play sensitive, soft music, kind of counterbalance my rather intense Italian personality. My wife, when we first started dating, and she'd go to our Italian gatherings where there were 9 simultaneous conversations going on, and she just shrunk into a corner. But now she's right smack in the middle of it all. Teresa from Washington State. Congratulations on your engagement, I think. How are you?
Thank you. I am well. I had a question. I'm excited about my engagement. But I guess my question to you would be, how do you know if something is too much for you to handle, or if you just are whining to put in the effort?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because I am having a really hard time distinguishing, because I'm currently working and going to school. I'm trying to get into a nursing program next fall, and I already have very few free time. Like, I need to work to pay for my school, so it's like I can't just sit this one. But I'm also going through the life transition of, you know, getting married, and I want to be a good wife. He will also be in school, so that gives me some peace. But Yeah, I guess besides my fiance, everybody's like, that's way too much on your plate. And yeah, so I don't know if it is or like if I will adapt to this.
Teresa, why do you believe them? In other words, if they say that's way too much on your plate, how do they know? Are you going to them and complaining?
I think they just see that I don't have free time, that I constantly say I can't, like, I'm sorry, I have homework.
Oh, so they want you to do certain social things, and you're really not all that available, and they're thinking, yeah, come on. You're not balanced here, Teresa.
Yeah, I have a big family. I mean, not like it, well, I have a big Mexican family, and we're like, kind of like how you mentioned, every 12 minutes, there's something, and I've had to say no to like birthday parties and things that, you know, with time they're beginning to understand, but there's just no way I can make everything. And so,
Teresa, yeah, are you saying, that's my psychology talk. I'm hearing you say, are you saying that, what you're doing, school, jobs, preparing for marriage, is a lot on your plate, but you can do it. It's time limited. You recognize that, yeah, you don't have a whole lot of free time given what you're pursuing. Your education eventually is going to be over, and you're eventually going to be able to work in your career field, and you won't have to work two jobs, and your husband-to-be will probably graduate, and he'll have a job. So that's all going to change. But are you saying that you wouldn't be that confused if you weren't getting pressure from other people saying, we don't see you, where are you, you're not paying attention to us, you're not coming around enough? Is that happening?
Yeah, I think that sometimes they understand, but sometimes they don't. And I guess I'm also concerned that I want to do all those things well. Like, I don't want to, like, my work performance to go down, or like, not, I mean, just being this busy, it's like harder to, I mean, COVID has helped in the way that we don't have to make as much wedding arrangements, but, yeah, like, I just want to also be a good wife, like, going in and preparing for that well, so.
Do you hear what you're saying, Teresa? Do you hear what you're saying, dear? You're saying, I'm looking into the future, and I'm wondering if I'm going to do these things well. But your best judgment is now, if you're doing it okay now, even though it's hard. And yeah, here and there, a few things will suffer because you got a lot going. That's what you make the judgment on. You know, if you find yourself not being able to sleep, or you're losing weight because you're not eating right, or you just have this tone of discontent, or you're irritable with people, okay, those are all signs that you might be loading yourself up a little bit too much. But if you're not doing that, if you're just saying, well, I really got myself into a lot of things right now, and so far so good, but I don't know if I'm going to unravel at some point 3 months from now. That kind of thinking doesn't help you. Because if you get to the point where you say, you know what, I can't keep this pace anymore, okay, then you make your moves. Then you cut back, and you do what you have to do. But you don't anticipate. You don't say, uh-oh. Well, what if I am a bad spouse? Or what if I don't plan my wedding right? Well, what if at work I got a little scatterbrained one day? Do you think maybe that's because I'm pulled in too many directions? You don't want to overanalyze it. There's been times in my life when I've been scattered in so many directions, and I have to look at it and go, yeah, well, I didn't do that very well. And I can live with that. Okay, you don't need to put that kind of pressure on yourself. If you can't handle this, it'll show up. It's not going to be based upon other people telling you can't handle it.
And then you also got to be careful, too, because they probably are feeling neglected and they think that they're taking it personal, that Teresa's not coming around like she used to. That's part of it.
Right.
So,
awesome. I mean, well, that helps a lot.
Well, you judge it on the basis of the now. You don't look down the road and say, what happens if? Well, what happens if, when you get there, you make the decision? And remember this, too. You don't have to be great at everything you take on. I'm working on a new book, and I just had the most ugly revelation when I went back and I looked at those early chapters and flat out said, they stink. They just stink. And I couldn't believe it. I was living under the illusion that I was putting out some nice piece of product until I went back and looked at it and thought, ah. So, yeah, apparently, I found out I couldn't write a book and do a whole bunch of other things at the same time and make the book good. So I had to go back and start working on it again. And that's okay. God bless you, dear. That's a really heartfelt call.
Thank you.
Hey, congrats. When's the date of the marriage here?
November. We don't know yet because there's kind of some unknowns. Yeah, I'm quarantined, so I can't do marriage prep.
Wait a minute.
I had a plan for it.
But you're only going to be quarantined for 14 days, right?
Yeah, I'm on my second quarantine back to back.
Well, who have you been in contact with? Somebody that tested positive or somebody that actually came up with symptoms?
No, somebody that tested positive.
And they traced it to you. They said, okay, here's one of the person I had contact with. It was Teresa.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, God bless your patience. Good for you. Keep it up.
Thanks.
All right. Bye now. All right. This is Dr. Ray. When we come back, we'll talk to Linda from Central Ohio. If you want to try, you can give it a shot. 877-573-7825. It's kind of a flip it of the coin. I was going to say it was kind of a roulette wheel, but we Catholics, when we play games of chance, we're more into bingo. I'm Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak.
Research shows that when families openly live and share their faith together, they're more able to respond positively to the challenges they face every day.
So if you're looking for help in creating that joyful place where each member of your family experiences life as a gift from God, then you will want to check out our book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide for Raising Faithful Kids.
You can find this book on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
The EWTN home video highlight for August is Lourdes with the Franciscan Missionaries of the Eternal Word. Go on pilgrimage with Father Joseph Mary Wolfe and Father John Paul Mary Zeller to the healing waters of Lourdes, where St. Bernadette first encountered Our Lady, and where all are now called to conversion. Order your DVD set at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
This program brought to you in part by the nonprofit Angelicum Academy.
This is Father Joseph Essio. I have an important message for all you homeschooling families. You can get an outstanding and fully accredited Catholic college education and save $100,000. To learn how, go to angelicum.net. That's angelicum.net. Earn 75 college credits and an associate's degree in high school for just $3,500 a year. And earn your BA degree just 1 year later at age 19. Check this out at angelicum.net.
We'll be right back.
people ask me if I have stress. Yeah. Yeah, this job creates stress. I'll give you a small example. I got a package of pretzels over here, and there's still pretzels in there, but I'm out of drink. So I would have to eat the pretzels without any fluid. That's okay. I'm still here. For me, it's all about commitment. Linda's calling from Central Ohio. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I know you probably won't remember, but one of the times I called him previously about trying to get an ex to cooperate in speaking to one of our grown children because she wasn't listening to me. And you said, did it ever occur to me that he didn't like me? And so he wasn't going to cooperate because he didn't have to and he doesn't like me.
Well, he broke up with you.
Missed the moment. Pardon?
He broke up with you.
Well, he sure did. But I missed the moment to say, well, so what? I don't like him either, but this is about our daughter, not about us. But anyway, here's the real thing I'm trying to get to, maybe in my head and maybe more locally. When people go through annulment and somebody is released from the marriage because they're too immature. I'm going to be very much like Dr. Ray here. I mean, would you tell your 16-year-old son who says, well, I've got my license now, Dad, and I'd like to drive the car and I won't have anybody else in it and I'll be back home by 9 o'clock and I'll obey all the rules. And you tell him, oh, okay. This is your first time out, so, you know, be careful. And then when he gets home, he's had an accident because he was looking at pretty girls walking along on the sidewalk while he was coming back home, and he didn't notice the cars had stopped ahead of him for a light. Now, would you release his culpability because he was too immature?
I know what you're saying. And there have been those folks who have said the whole psychological variables involved in commitment to a marriage. When you go back and you look at it and you find that there was immaturity or you find that there were psychological troubles of some type, and that would be evidence that the marriage wasn't really in a valid state from the beginning. I know what you're saying. There's a lot of people saying, boy, that's awful wide. That's awful vague. The only thing I say about that is that the church has the authority to make that judgment. And I know there's a lot of folks. I've talked to folks, Linda, who say, okay, my spouse has tried to get an annulment on the basis of immaturity or on the basis of not understanding what commitment means. And he got it. And I think that's ridiculous because I knew exactly what I was doing. And I think he knew exactly what he was doing.
Well, no. Tell me, did you know exactly what you were doing when you got married? How old were you?
31.
And would you say even at 31 you knew what you were doing and what the commitment was going to require of you? Oh, heck no. Nobody does until they're married for a while.
Well, but to use your logic.
A best friend's coming up on their 50th anniversary, and we were all friends, all of us. You know, this is a big group of couples that hung out for years together. And they've had their problems, some of them really huge, and very close to families breaking up.
Using that logic, though, wait a minute, Linda, hold on. Here's the problem.
Yes.
If you say closeness to Christ results in spiritual maturity, then that's a lifelong process. So you can always look back and say, I was nowhere near as mature. I was nowhere near as connected to Jesus when I got married as I am now. You could always say that if you're spiritually maturing. So that doesn't necessarily imply I wasn't mature enough. It's like the old, I was taught age 7 is the age of culpability. It's the age of reason. So you sin after age 7, you can really be held accountable. Well, we now know that's just a very
vague. Ridiculous.
Yes, very vague rule of thumb, because people are all over the map at age 7 in terms of their maturity. Got that. But at some point, you got to make the judgment and say this person was mature enough or they weren't mature enough. That's what it comes down to. Sometimes it's real clear. I've had clients who clearly were misled on their wedding day, flat out, and it's very obvious. And then the ones you're talking about, which is, yeah, there was a lack of maturity, but how mature are any of us? Call me back. Dr. Ray, got to run. Thank you for everything.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.